Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of The Morning Yankee Show. It is Thursday, March 26, 2026. Hope everybody is doing well. Let me get out in front of the elephant in the room right away. I apologize so much for the delay in the live stream today. I have no excuse. I just overslept like a buffoon, and that is why we are 2 hours late to begin this show. We were supposed to go live at 8 a.m. Instead, we go live now at 10 a.m. Won't happen again. I apologize. But let's get into the story of the day, which of course is the Yankees' opening day victory over the San Francisco Giants. 7-0 was the final score. And before we really break it down, let's take a listen to what it sounded like, as well as some post-game sound from Aaron Boone.
Casey Schmidt with two gone and a runner at third in a 7-0 deficit. And on the first pitch, a high drive for Aaron Judge that will put a close to business on opening night. A statement win for the New York Yankees. A 7-0 shutout on the road is how they open their 2026 campaign.
It's one of 162, but something to be said for getting the first win on the board?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you want to get that first win, first hits, you know, pitchers getting their first outing, and, you know, you want to get in that normal rhythm of the season, which takes a little bit of time. So, obviously a great way to start things.
There's a lot of talk this offseason about, like, why are you guys running it back? Do you feel like some people kind of underestimated this offense in a way coming into the year?
I don't know. But, I mean, we've got a lot to prove. And look, we're confident. I know they're confident in their ability to have good at-bats and put up runs. But we're one game into this thing, and we still got a long ways to go to prove that, and I think we have a chance to do that.
All right, 7-0 is your final, and we have so much to break down today. We're going to talk about Max Fried in just a moment. There's some specific storylines I really want to get into, but just from a general standpoint, listen, Matt Vasgersian, he closed out the game by saying a statement victory for the New York Yankees on the road to begin the season. I don't know if statement victory is exactly the lane that I would go down with this, but there was a refreshing brand of baseball played yesterday. And it was, no, not the fact they didn't hit a home run. I actually would have preferred if they had their first home run of the season yesterday. Half kidding, but no. The bottom third of the order was incredible. We're really going to get into Ryan McMahon, but let's discuss first things first, Trent Grisham. Because, listen, that five-run second inning that the Yankees had, in itself, that's awesome, obviously. Then you top on who it came from, the bottom of the third of the order. Additionally, the fact that it's against Logan Webb, one of the best pitchers in baseball. We're going to get into more, again, at the bottom third in just a moment. But with Trent Grisham, that might be my favorite aspect of last night's game because he has gotten so much, he's gotten so much crap since the Yankees offered him the qualifying offer and he accepted it that you would almost think he was an imposing player. Now, I understand totally people having their opinion on not wanting to bring him back, and I can forgive one for being of the logic that if you didn't get Grisham on a $22 million deal, maybe you could have signed a reliever or two. I do wonder who exactly those relievers were. And you know how I feel about the idea of banking on Jason Dominguez going into this year and holding that hope that he's for sure a guarantee to be productive defensively and from the right side of the plate. Instead, the Yankees bring Trent Grisham back, gives them options. I liked the signing. Now, again, with that said, I can understand people not agreeing with a certain decision the Yankees make. I can absolutely understand that. But there has been a little bit extra disrespect headed Trent Grisham's way where it almost feels like people really got an issue with this dude. I just don't understand why. So that's the first thing I want to tackle on here today. One of my favorite moments from last night, which there were many, was him with that two-run triple. And he smoked the ball later on that got caught. But a very good sign, Trent Grisham, after a, you know, rough spring, and that really only made the noise louder. But the two-run triple last night, that was awesome. Part of a five-run first inning. Again, Caballero, McMahon, we're going to talk about them in topic three. But let's just get back to the general vibe of last night's game. It was clean baseball. Outside of the error from Caballero in the ninth, there was no issues defensively. There was no base running mistakes. Everything was buttoned up to the highest degree, really. I mean, the only issue from last night, and if you even want to call it an issue, it's not. Like, the blemish, I should say. The only blemish from last night would be that Judge struck out four times. Not ideal. And I was saying the watch party last night, I don't care. All it means is Judge is going to go from hitting 345 come season's end to 341. I could have gone without a golden sombrero performance on opening day, only because, you know, that's the first thing people mention to me. despite, you know, a 7-0, very clean-looking opening day win for the New York Yankees, it's first thing mentioned to Dar is that Judge struck out four times. Whatever, though. It's all good. But bottom line is that win last night, it is just one. And in my head, it's very similar to opening days that we've had in the past, generally speaking, of good vibes. This is actually the fifth straight, did I read that? The fifth straight opening day that the Yankees have taken? 22, 23, 24, 25, 26. Yeah, so that is five straight opening day victories for the Yankees. We have had good, we had good vibes on 2023 opening day. We had good vibes in, maybe that's really the only example, but point is, obviously, doesn't need to be said. What does this actually mean? Nothing long term, but all we have is this one game to go off of. And until further notice, I am going to have some excitement over the fact the Yankees were hitting for runners in scoring position last night. Trent Grisham barreled some balls. Brian McMahon, his first at-bat was very impressive. I don't want to talk too much about him just yet because I have a whole segment dedicated to him. You know, Caballero is going to talk about in that too, but let's discuss him now. I mean, that single that he had, it was just his one hit on the night, and he did have the error in the ninth inning, which, not a big deal. I was actually more annoyed because I wanted Camilo Duvall to have a clean scoreless inning, which he did. But anyways, we know the narrative in going into this year, at least the narrative I'm really trying to push, which is accurate, that there's competition at shortstop this year for Anthony Volpe. Well, Caballero, in his very first at-bat of the season, ripping an RBI single, an RBI double into left field. I mean, that's as good as you get to begin this whole storyline officially, which is now an in-season storyline. We have about at least 3 weeks until Volpe returns. What can Caballero do in the meantime to make the Yankees' decision to play Volpe as tough as possible? I do think Volpe's going to get some run no matter what. And heck, maybe he's good. He is healthy. He says he feels great. But we knew the deal going into this. What Cashman said, may the best man may the best man win and keep the job. And so far, granted, it's just one hit, but it was a big hit. It got things going yesterday. That was one of the most exciting moments of yesterday's game. Now, to keep it more general here, because that's what I want this topic to be about, and then we'll move on to Max Fried. Again, all we have is one game to go off of, so allow me to indulge here a little bit. But there was a little bit of an edge to the Yankees last night. An edge of not trying to, like, prove people wrong, per se. Because, you know, Boone was asked, as we heard in the soundbite, you know, the question about running it back and all the outside noise about that. And Boone kind of just shrugged it off like, well, we don't really care about that. We know we're good, blah, blah, blah. It actually kind of felt like that last night, where the Yankees were just taking care of business. And it being against Logan Webb only adds to how exciting of a victory that it was. You know, the first inning, it was a breeze. You had Trent Grisham struck out. And no matter what, it's one at bat, so who really cares? But people do care because they're, you know, they sometimes forget the sport they're watching, that it's baseball. And it'll be, I guarantee you, after that first Trent Grisham strikeout yesterday, somebody turned over to their dad and was like, see, I told you, they shouldn't have signed this fucking bum. Excuse my French. But anyways, first inning was smooth as hell for Webb. He struck out Grisham, he struck out Judge, got Bellinger to fly out, 1-2-3. And then you get to the second inning, and Stanton rips a single into right center field. He had two hits. Don't want to forget about him, as well as a RBI single later in the game. And that ball was smoked, 114 miles an hour off the bat. Stanton gets on, and then you have Jazz getting plunked in the back, which, actually, excuse me, it was the ribs. And that looked like it hurt like a B-word, but he was all good. And obviously takes his base. Stanton goes a second. And then when Caballero rips that single to left field, I was just hyped because, oh, word, Caballero got a base hit. Let's go. But I was saying on the watch party, which is on the main channel, by the way, we're doing them for every single game. On the watch party, I was saying, Caballero, base hit, let's go. It's not going to score Stanton, though. Oh, it is. It is going to score Stanton. Stanton scored from second base on this single, which is like another little thing to mention with this very play right here. I mean, not to celebrate a fish for swimming or whatever, but I mean, I think we were all in the same mindset last night when Stanton was on second base as Caballero was hitting that ball. It was, you figure he's not going to score, and that's fine. That's Stanton, whatever. But he did. And that was cool, too. And then after that, you get into McMahon. We'll talk more about him. And the Grisham two-run double. Fried was terrific. And, you know, let's officially get into that right here. So, final line on Max Fried and his first start of the year. magnificent. 6 1/3 innings, 2 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 4 strikeouts. The only walk that he allowed was a 4-pitch walk to Luis Arraez to begin the game. And no matter what, again, it's opening day, so it's like, oh, this is going to be a rocky first inning for Fried. Ideally not, but like, you don't really panic, especially with Max Fried or nothing. But a very stark difference to his opening day last year. Remember, he did not start the season opener for the Yankees. He pitched game two. It was Carlos Rodon who pitched opening day. It was like a scheduling thing. But, he had a rocky first outing in his Yankee debut. It was a couple errors. I think one of them was committed by himself. But it wasn't very smooth and clean. This was just outside of the first inning, really. Even though he had some trouble, he navigated out of it. And then after that, it was just pure cruise control, man. I mean, the fastball looked great. The sinker looked great. The cutter looked terrific. The slider, everything about it. And by the way, a little side note, Max Fried, dude, his hair is looking long. And I love it. But just to hammer this point home, how long this hair is, I mean, it's the length of if we had not had the Devin Williams makeover to this Yankee, our pride and tradition in class, he would have to cut that shit, yo. He's got some long hair. I love it. I think he looks sick. And Max Fried is not becoming one of my favorite Yankees. He already is by default. But he is so 90s Yankee, it feels like, man. Outside of laying an egg against a division rival in a big postseason game, that's all good. It's almost like a little inside riffing joke that I have one side with Max Fried at this point, because I love him so much, but I also can't ever not mention that maybe we shouldn't blame the offense that much for our loss against Toronto, and Max Fried's got to pitch better. I'm not playing the blame game with that, and I think Toronto had a tell on Fried. Things happen. Let's move past that, and I got to tell myself that because I keep bringing it up. And I kept saying, by the way, out of respect for what the Blue Jays did to us last year, which was they had their way with us. They're the better team. I consider us, if I'm breaking things down, I think the Yankees are just as good, if not better. But until further notice, because what they did last year, out of respect, I'll say the Blue Jays are the better team. Well, I always said that applies until the very first game of the season. We are now 1-0. Nobody cares about 2025 anymore. The Yankees are the best team in the American League East. Now I'm going to allow myself to say that. Anyways, Fried was fantastic last night. Yeah, 6 1/3, scoreless. Let's hear from him. He goes in to mention about how he didn't have his best stuff. I feel like pitchers say all the time now, but regardless, the outing was good. Here is Fried on his first start of the season.
It's one of those outings where you just got to try to figure out how to get it done when you aren't the most locked in, especially coming out the gate, walking a guy on 4 pitches and having to grind through it. Definitely was searching, but when the guys go out there and put up 5 runs in the second, and it just allows you to take a deep breath and get into the game.
Yeah, so listen, we've talked a lot about the starting rotation and how insane it can be. And I've come on here and mentioned how I almost feel like the rotation pre-Rodon's return and pre-Cole's return isn't getting enough love. I think we have one of the better, really no doubt about it, one of the better staffs in the American League as we speak currently in Fried, Schlittler, who will make his debut on Friday. Fried, Schlittler, Warren, Weathers, and then Luis Gil. Let's not forget about Luis Gil, by the way. We won't talk too much about him today because we've been talking about him so much. But he is going to be part of this rotation. He's going to be pitching when the Yankees need a fifth starter come right around April 11th. But anyways, we've talked about it. We know how good this rotation can be. But now that it's actually, the season is here, there's no more speculation, which is one of the best parts about opening day is now it actually is like a tangible thing to chew on. We just saw Max Fried in his first start. We're 1-for-1, 6 1/3, scoreless. And, the conversation about how many aces we have. One, it depends on like what you consider an ace to be. Fried is absolutely in that category. Gerrit Cole, when healthy, is absolutely in that category. Is Carlos Rodon in that category? The Carlos Rodon we saw last year, absolutely. And reminder, I do always have to mention this. He did shit the bed against Toronto as well. Why am I cursing so much today? Is it because I woke up late and I'm cranky? I'm not actually cranky. I'm in a great mood, but I was irritated when I overslept this morning. I apologize again. That won't happen again. Rodon had his elbow like basically fallen off. He couldn't straighten it out against Toronto, so got to forgive him for that starter, give him a pass. But the numbers he put up last year, Rodon, 18 wins, ERA right around 3, a whip just barely over 1. I mean, that is 100% an ace-level performance. Now, in terms of the feel with Rodon, I think you put him just below. Like, as a fan, when you're seeing who's pitching that night, you should feel really good about Rodon. But I would say it's Fried and Cole, and then just under that is Rodon. And right now, I would say Cam Schlittler's in that tier just below as well. Less proven of a track record, of course. We'll see how this year goes in year two. And he could ascend to that top tier ace level. But the point is, I'm trying to get at here is, We knew this rotation would be good. We know what the long-term postseason plans are. Freed, Cole, Rodon, Cam, some variation of that. But in terms of the Freed, Cole, Rodon aspect of three aces, it's like I know how good Max Freed is. I watched him all last year. He was terrific. And if not for Tarik Skubal and Gerrit Crochet, I mean, that's the season he put up last year. Sub-3 ERA, 19 wins. I mean, that can be a Cy Young winning season any year. Not to mention it was in year one of a massive 8-year contract. Like, I already love Max Fried. I know he's great. But now the new season is upon us, and we have one game to talk about in this season. And so far what we got is true results of a rotation that long-term we project to be fantastic. 6 1/3 scoreless from Max Fried. I have him as our postseason game one starter because I want to split up Cole and Rodon, or excuse me, Fried and Rodon, the two lefties. I would have Cole pitch game two. I know that's a ways away, but Fried was spectacular last night, and that's the main thing. He's a terrific pitcher. Very happy to have him. But I also love the way he handles himself. I love, for lack of a better word, like the look of Max Fried. And this isn't about the hair thing again. Although that looks great. He fits the bill of what a Yankee should look like. And he's handled himself great. That's a very big thing, especially when a player comes over on a massive deal. You know, I grew up a massive A-Rod fan, for those who don't know. And don't got to get into it. It's obvious that, like, it wasn't the best handled thing. He also got unfairly criticized for a lot of things, A-Rod did. But, you know, I'll make the comparison with, like, Giancarlo Stanton because it's a very clear-cut, easy comparison to make. When we acquired A-Rod, coming off an MVP, had a massive contract in the books, same with Stanton coming off an MVP, pretty much like a total difference in how they handled each other, or each other, handled themselves. I don't want to be shocked if, not even trying to go at A-Rod here or whatever, I love A-Rod, but if A-Rod kind of like almost created the handbook of what not to do, which made it a little bit easier for Stan to be like, all right, this is how I'm going to handle myself. And any player on a big contract, and we're talking about Max Fried here, he's handled himself terrifically. Now, it's easy to do that when you're having success. But like with Stanton, there's been many times where he's not around, had a bad game. Always remember the opening day in Yankee Stadium, 2018, his first ever Yankee Stadium appearance. He goes 0 for 5 with 5 Ks, and he gets booed. Not right, but what does he say at the end of the game? I would have booed me too. Now, Max Fried, we talked great season last year, great start yesterday. Not to bring up the Toronto start again, but in a complimentary way, like he just acknowledged he got beat and handled himself terrific and said, can't happen. It did. Going to move on to be better next time. Like, it's very simple. Had to, like, I don't want to say appeal to me as a Yankee fan, but like us as a whole. And it is accountability. It is handling yourself the right way on top of the main thing, which obviously is performance. And so far, that's been pretty damn good for Max Fried. And last night was no difference, or no different. So shout out for Fried. 1 for 1 so far in this year of the starting rotation for the New York Yankees. We can kind of put the theme on. But shout out Max Fried. He was fantastic last night. But let's get into what I really want to talk about. You know, last night after the second inning, I was saying to the chat, because so many things happened that I was just head over heels for or over the moon for or whatever. You know, the Caballero, McMahon, Grisham, Austin Wells, by the way, he had, what did he have, 2 hits last night it was? Yeah, Wells had 2 hits. Stanton had 2. So many, really, again, outside of Judge, like literally just Judge, which was just like not ideal, but like you truly, like who cares that Judge had 4 strikeouts, honestly. That aside, that's the only blemish from last night's game. Like there were so many aspects that were awesome. And I was posing the question to the chat after the second inning. I'm like, yo, out of all the things that we just saw, what was the one that you can definitively say you're the most excited about? Because I think it was a fair question with all the storylines we know going into this year and everything we just talked about. For me, though, this is what I'm trying to get at as I ramble. McMahon, I know it's just one game, but this at-bat, we're going to talk about it. Let's take a listen to the at-bat, and McMahon will discuss it afterwards.
0-2 from Webb. Bouncer heading up the middle, and that's going to get through and drive in a couple of runs. 3-0 New York.
Guys were just going up there, doing what the game asked them to do, take their knock, and, you know, we put a bunch of balls in play, found a couple holes, and ended up putting up a good number.
Just 1 of 162, but validating for you to have a big hit there? Yeah. Drive in some runs?
Yeah, it's always helpful. You know, it's just about stacking good at bats, a lot of games left, and glad to get the first one.
All right, so McMahon last night, 1 for 3 with that 2-run single and also had a walk as well, which that at-bat where he walked, it was his second plate appearance And well, let's discuss the first at bat really quick, because he had two strikes. And obviously, we know about the changes that he's made with the stance. He's shortening up his stance. Last year, he had the fourth widest stance in all of baseball. That has been heavily condensed. The Yankees have gone to work as far back as December. They started, like, they went to town on McMahon and his mechanics at the plate, the way he sets up, the way he loads. The changes have been made. And no matter what, New Year starts, whether it's pitching to catcher's report, opening day, some success in spring training, which McMahon really didn't have. But, you know, naturally this time of year is a very optimistic, like, the land of hope. Things can be different. This guy could improve. So you already have that. But when you add on top of it mechanical adjustments and, like, a change being made, that's all it takes for me to further my optimistic absurdity, some might describe it as. But, like, with McMahon, obviously it's just one game. But he had two strikes on that at bat before the two-run single. And there was a runner on third. And no matter what, the second he made contact on that ball and it goes up the middle, that's a successful at bat. One, he didn't strike out, which last year he struggled over 30% of the time. And we talk a lot about, it's weird, he doesn't chase, but he whiffs on pitches in the zone. But he had two strikes on him in that at bat, and he grounds it up the middle, which initially I thought it was just going to be a play made by the second baseman, Luis Arraez. And I was being a little unfair to Arraez last night. I kind of just, like, was chalking up to any other second baseman would have had that ball. It was up the middle. That was a clean two-run single for McMahon. But regardless, even if the second baseman had made that play, it's a great display of some bat the ball when it's needed. Two strikes would have, on the ground ball up the middle, even if he was out, would have scored. Who was Stanton on that play? Ends up going through, so he gets a two-run single out of it. And then the very next at-bat, he was down in the count against Logan Webb and ended up taking some great pitches, working the count full, and then on the 3-2 pitch, took a sinker that was very close, but it was a ball. It was inside, and he worked a walk. And that's what we know with McMahon. He already has the great eye. So with him, too, I mean, the foundation is kind of there. It really is with McMahon. I cannot emphasize enough just how, not weird it is, but, like, I always make the comparison. If you were to tell a blind person, this player doesn't chase, this player hits the crap out of the ball, you would just guess they're a pretty decent hitter. But the problem with McMahon is, while those things are really good, he barrels the ball, he doesn't chase, his eye is fantastic, he whiffs on pitches in the zone. So hopefully between the adjustments the Yankees have made and the fact of he's most going to be playing against right-handed pitching this year, and then you have Rosario platoon against lefties. It's like, as a Yankee fan, you're, like, well within your, I don't say rights, but, like, to feel good about what McMahon did last night and to have hope that he could be better. And then we can also get into, just in general, the bottom third of the order. Something I'll talk about a lot lately is I want one ascension from Caballero, McMahon, or Wells. That's our pretty much staple bottom third of the order. Of course, Volpe will be incorporated into that as well when he returns. But, hey, I want all of them to be great. And I think there's a chance every single one of those players is at least a league average bat or, like, right around. Caballero, McMahon, Wells. I think Wells could go a heck of a lot higher than that. But anyways, Austin Wells with two hits last night. That was, I would say, an equivalent W as well. Coming off the WBC, which he was pretty damn good in. Had a couple homers. Was vibing with the DR. We know his defense is fantastic. And that gives him a floor to be one of the better catchers in baseball already, as we currently speak. I mean, even last year, he was right on a fringe top 10 catcher because the defense is so good. I mean, he's been a below league average hitter in both his first MLB seasons, his first two MLB seasons full. But he's put up around a 3 WAR in each year because the defense is so good. And obviously we know coming up, his prospect outlook was to be a great or offense first. And the question was, how is his defense? Well, now the defense is fantastic. The bat is what has been lacking. Well, not last night. 2 for 3 and also a walk. Now, will Austin Wells be a 120 WRC plus bat? Maybe one day. Will I bank on that for this year? No. Projections, though, having to finally be above league average around a 105 WRC+. And even that, which is not that crazy of an improvement for Austin Wells, it's really what, anytime you watch him, you think it's quite easily attainable for him to be a above league average hitter, but he hasn't been so far. Even that little, I don't want to say incremental jump, because that's still a massive leap, I guess, 94 WRC+ to 105, a.k.a. slightly below average to slightly above average. Just that improvement right there. And apply that to all those three guys. Caviar, McMahon, Wells, the bottom third of the order. One of the three having an improvement along those lines will do wonders for us. Because the top six of our order is really good. Really good. I don't think anybody really dispute that. But the problem, particularly once you get to the postseason, because the regular season, it won't be too much of an issue. Like, the Yankees are going to score in the regular season. They're going to hit a bunch of homers, score a bunch of runs. We'll probably lead baseball in runs scored. But come the postseason, yes, there's some areas we want to shore up. And the strikeouts, I think certain guys need to, you know, make sure they have a two-strike approach when it's called for, which it's called for when there's two strikes. But the bottom third of the order, having an actual, not even a threat, but a competent at-bat from one of those three guys. And by the way, that's not asking much. I mean, there's a world where all three of them show significant improvements this year, and then we're feeling really good going into October. But there's going to be many times where, say, but just say for argument's sake, Grisham, Judge, Bellinger, 1-2-3, okay, things happen, like last night, whatever. Second inning, Bellinger, Rice, Stanton, Jazz, there's a very good chance, just say in a postseason game, a couple of those guys get on. Well, when it's first and second, one out, and batting order turns to what it was like last year in Volpe, McMahon, Wells, the 2025 version of those guys, it's not exactly a lost cause, but you're not feeling great about it. And understandably so, because those guys have not been good offensively. Well, this year, you have Caballero, and I feel good about his offense. McMahon, we know about his improvements, everything we just talked about there. Austin Wells. Point is, if one of those three, just one of those three, and it could be more, it could be all of them, it could be two of the three. It also could be none of the three, which is not unfortunate, or would be not ideal. But if one of those three can ascend to their next level, which really is just right around a league average hitter, all three of them that applies to, maybe even a little bit better in some cases, like Austin Wells, I think can be a 110 WRC plus guy. That will change the entire landscape of this lineup, because we know about the 1-6. It's the bottom of the third of the order that needs improvement. And last night was, I mean, that was kind of outside of Freed, and I guess outside of the two-run triple from Trent Grisham, that was the story of last night, was the Yankees' bottom third of the order. And yeah, the fact of they scored seven runs without hitting a homer, that stuff never really appeals to me all that much, because I think homers are very important. I think you could hit homers, want to hit homers, but also want a two-strike approach as well. I like Ballinger's approach a lot, because granted, there are times where, actually last night was one of them, where, you know, he will do a weird, like, protective swing even when there's not two strikes, which you shouldn't do that. If there's not two strikes, I want you swing. Stick to your approach, but if you're a guy that does believe in the home run, which if you're a New York Yankee, you probably do, before there's two strikes, that's what I want you going for. Or I shouldn't say for the home run, but try to hit the crap out of the ball. But once it does get the two strikes, and this is something I love about Bellinger, like, you should shorten up. That's where I still 100% have, like, the old-fashioned baseball mindset. You should have a two-strike approach, whether that means choking up or doing whatever you got to do, shortening up. I mean, I'm not going to get into the hitting mechanics thing. That's the hitting mechanics. That's not really my thing. I don't feel it's my place. We'll get Dan Rourke Sr. on here to talk about hitting mechanics one day, because he thinks Dan Rourke Sr.'s biggest enemy in the world is whatever Democrats running for office and whoever the Yankee hitting coach is in that current moment. This goes back to, like, the Kevin Long days. He thinks they're all, but anyways, Dan Rourke Sr., we're going to get into the Netflix in a moment. He was pissed last night about Netflix for many reasons. We'll get into that in just a moment. But anyways, as I put in the title box here, it's just one game, but that's all we got to judge off for now. So that being the case, I'm going to celebrate what we saw last night, generally speaking, but particularly the bottom third of the order, I think, was the most exciting aspect of the opening day win. Let's move on, though, to the bullpen. So we didn't get a huge sample size out of the pen because Fried went pretty deep in the game with his 6 1/3 scoreless. But we did have our first kind of like further bullpen tryouts from spring training now into the regular season of, one, who's going to stay in this roster once Hill returns? Who's going to be the sixth inning man for the Yankees? Because we know if things go well, it will be Cruz. Well, Bednar's your closer, and then you figure Duvall's the eighth inning guy, Cruz is a seventh inning guy. And you got Tim Hill for the lefties. Those are kind of the mainstay staples that we can put in one tier of the Yankee bullpen. Well, after that, it's a question of who's getting the sixth? Who's the guy that's going to bridge, or who's the group of guys that are going to bridge to the back end of the bullpen that you feel pretty decent about, at least compared to the rest? Well, first up yesterday was Jake Bird. He goes 2 1/3 scoreless, gets two outs, and he immediately was the reliever that relieved Max Fried. he looked incredible last night. Very small outing, I know. Only two outs, two batters faced. But his first AB was a strikeout, and he was throwing the sinker, and boy, was it moving. He was throwing the slider. The command on the slider wasn't great, but holy crap. I mean, there was one that started almost like it was a right-handed batter for the Giants. It was the first at-bat. I think it was a Bader, whoever it was, but a bird threw a slider that looked like when he released the ball, it was starting at the right-handed batter's shoulder, and it ended up moving so much that it ended up in the left-hander's batter's box, and it was a ball. But, dude, bird stuff was moving last night, and that's never the question with him, what his true stuff is. I mean, you can do the eye test with that, as we just did right now. You can look at the metrics like Stuff Plus. The stuff is there for Jake Bird. But we know what happened last year. Yankees acquired him from the Rockies, and he was really good with the Rockies. But then he comes over to us, implodes for a week, and we really never see him again until now. I would say he definitely has the inside lane to like be that six-inning guy, like the main reliever after the tier of Bednar, Cruz, Duvall. And for all we know, Jake Bird can be so good, and this applies really to anybody. Like Brent Hedrick, inning scoreless yesterday, one hit. It was a little clunky here and there, but got a big out against Rafael Devers. Also had a strikeout as well. He goes a scoreless eighth. He's somebody that, along with, I guess you could put Paul Blackburn into this tier. The Yankees think he could be the next Luke Weaver. They know more than I do, so I don't want to be like, oh, I disagree. But Paul Blackburn, I hope it happens. But anyways, like Cade Winquest. The Yankees selected him in the Rule 5 draft for a reason. All these guys have so much upside. And knowing the Yankees' track record of being able to develop relievers, if you're a betting man, you figure at least one of these guys are going to hit and be the next Ian Hamilton, be the next Jake Cousins, be the next Lucas Litke or Luke Weaver, like whoever it may be. I like Brent Hedrick a lot. He might be my number one in this case, but maybe a little bit biased. Like I think it could be very like Jake Bird. Jake Bird, his stuff is so good that we might be looking at him as the best pitcher in the bullpen come October. Like that's how quickly these things can change. I'm not a football guy, but I do like the comparison of like relievers are very much like running backs. Like it's so is volatile the word. Like it's so ever changing. So I mean, one of these guys, for example, like Hedrick could be great this year. Bird could be great this year, and then next year could have a 6 ERA. Like that's kind of just how relievers work. And the ones that are great because they're consistent. Obviously, Moe's a different story, but multiple years put together of a reliever with great success is rare. Which is why, like, I mean, one of the best relievers I've ever watched, probably many of you as well, is Dellin Betances. I mean, what he did over a 5-year stretch, as the years go on, it's not to the level of like, oh, I should appreciate him the way I did Mo. But Mo, I came up and he was already what he was. My first year watching was 2011. In the case of Dellin Betances, all I knew about him was the killer bees and that he was a big-time prospect, ultimately a failed starter. Last chance was to be a bullpen arm. Next thing you know, 2014, he's putting up a 1.5, and that's kind of where he was at for a good 5-year stretch. And it was still early enough in my baseball-watching career where I was, like, not appreciative in a way of how, honestly, not normal that was. You know, guys have success, but it is very rare for relievers to be consistently great, or at least just not almost ever-changing results year in and year out. I mean, even Bednar, we feel great about Bednar. He was awesome last year, I think the year prior to that too. But like, take a look at what Bednar was in like 2023. He had a 5 ERA a couple years ago. I mean, like those type of things will happen. But the reason I mention that is because, especially with the Yankees, like they're more capable than anybody of just turning a guy that we're not all that excited about, which is why I got to kind of give him the benefit of the doubt for the time being on Paul Blackburn. Who am I to say he ain't going to be the next Luke Weaver? You know, I mean, the way I feel about Paul Blackburn now is the same way I felt watching Luke Weaver at the end of 2023 and going into 2024. Granted, I applied the same logic then. Like, no, look, I don't know more than the Yankees. So I'm going to see it through and I'll react accordingly. And heck, the only way to react accordingly right now, yes, just one game, that's all we got, is Jake Bird looked pretty damn good last night. And then Kamil Duvall, he's not in that same, he's got to be good, but he's still kind of a question mark. His stuff looked good last night. The Cabe era bothered me because, one, I have my Volpe narrative going that there's competition at shortstop, which is very much the case. It is true. I want Cabe era to be good defensively at short, which he is a good defensive shortstop. I saw someone commenting on the highlights I did last night, which those came out hella late. I didn't get those out till like 3:30 in the morning because we had baseball today. We had to record, which is out now. Anyways, so many comments that are like, the shortstop is Bunts. I'm like, oh, dude, is it just like a thing? Like, no matter who the shortstop is, we just say their ass? And that applied to Jeter, too, because, you know, Jeter's defense was fucking terrible, which that narrative, you know how I feel about that. And it's not that it was inaccurate, but people act as if Derek Jeter was a meatball at shortstop his entire career. No, like right around 2007, 2008, the range started to decline. That's when it became a problem. Cashman started to consider the ideas of moving him off the position, and that was in large part due to age. But even so, when Jeter was younger, sure, did he have the range of Alex Rodriguez? No. But when people would say, oh, the shortstop's ass, the shortstop's terrible, like you would think, like if I was a kid that didn't know any better, and I hear, yo, Derek Jeter was a bad defender, what I consider that would mean is a ball would be hit to Derek Jeter and you'd be holding your breath. No, never the case. No. Yes, his range got worse as years went on. I don't care about retroactive defensive run save. Like if you give me defensive run save stat from like 1996, like I don't care. Which I don't even think they said his metrics were bad back then anyways. But that's just like a pet peeve of mine, yo. It's become a thing where, you know, the old like, oh, this guy is been talked about like he's so overrated, now he's underrated. That's kind of where the Jeter conversation has gone. And I'm a massive A-Rod guy, especially coming up. And I would always say, because I was, it was like the hot take when I was in like seventh grade, I would be like, you know, A-Rod was a far better shortstop than Derek Jeter, right? You know, A-Rod and Jeter aren't in the same stratosphere, right? Now I was cooking, I was right. But like now it's like everybody says it to the point where it's overblown. Sorry, little tangent of a rant there. But like, it's just one error for Caballero last night. That's all well and good. But anyways, with Duvall, outside of that, which obviously wasn't his fault. It was, he induced a nice easy ground ball. He was good. Scoreless inning from Duvall. So the bullpen, as I put in the graphic here, is one for one so far. We got 159 games left. But this first month is really what's going to be interesting because we're going to see guys come into the role. Again, I think Jake Bird probably has an inside edge into that bridge six inning role to the back end. But yeah, one for one so far. And we'll see how they do on Friday, which we're going to need the bullpen. We're going to rely on the bullpen pretty heavy because Cam Schlittler, remember, his pitch count is only up to like 75-ish because he got off the late start in camp with the mid-back inflammation. So the bullpen will be heavily relied upon Friday. And we will be live tomorrow morning, by the way, for that. No doubt about it. We'll have a watch party. Friday's game is on Yes. Awesome. But it is a 4 o'clock start. I wish it was later. Anyways, let's wrap it up here with some thoughts on Netflix. Now, I was actually surprised to a degree seeing how much criticism Netflix got last night. First things first, let me say, I love the scorebug. The scorebug, I don't follow along with any criticism on that. I think it showed us what it needed to show us. Now, the bug was nice. The scorebug, it's like the design is what I'm talking about. Them, when they would do a mic'd up segment like with Jazz and not showing the scorebug while they had that split screen up, that was absurd. That was awful. And I hate mic'd up segments. I hate in-game interviews. But I kind of expect that with a national broadcast these days. I was surprised at how much shit Netflix got last night. I still feel pretty okay about the broadcast, and I love Vet Scurgeon. I think CC, you know, he's new to the whole play-by-play thing. Hunter Pence was pretty good. I will say, watching the highlights back, I did notice more than I initially did on the watch party and when I was watching the game live. There were a few moments where Netflix would cut back from replay too late or change the scene too late and we'd come back mid-pitch. Like Austin Wells, Cody, but there were a couple singles where it cut back to the main feed as they're making contact or like after making contact. That is just something that's unacceptable. I mean, you cannot ever run your broadcast to where there's times where you're not seeing the game. I didn't notice that as much watching it live because some of them happened while I'm like posting clips. Like Wells had a single that was right after Caballero's RBI. So I'm like getting that up on Yanks Ave. I didn't notice at the time, but that very pitch, like they cut back, have their whole little like transition wipe, and it's, once it wipes away the transition, it's Austin Wells finishing his follow through on a single. Like you didn't even see it happen. That's whack. So after I watched the highlights, I was like, ah, see, that's not great. Like that's really my one ask going into last night, any broadcast in general. I know there's gonna be shit I don't like. A lot of the special guest crap was nonsense. That Burt dude, like I'm sure he's a great guy, but like what are we doing? You gotta show me the game. So my review of the Netflix broadcast last night before watching the highlights back and like running through the whole game on replay would have probably been a good like 8 out of 10. In hindsight, retroactive change, I'll say 6.5 out of 10. Overall, though, I don't think it was terrible. I think people are really getting on Netflix, and that's fine, whatever. I don't really care. But I don't think it was dreadful, but it could have been better. And the main thing is, dude, just show us the game. Like, it's so easy. I always say it's so easy to not F up a baseball broadcast. You just show the baseball game. Simple as that. Show the freaking baseball game. Vasgersian, I thought, was really good. Like, I thought the play-by-play and the entire broadcast, with even CC being a little, you know, rusty to start off his in-booth broadcasting career, they didn't talk. Like, a lot of times the Fox broadcast, they talk to you, like, in a condescending tone almost. They talk to you like you're a baby and you've never played baseball once in your life. Smoltz does it. Joe Davis does it. Hey, we'll have Fox on Saturday, so looking forward to that. We'll be live, though. We will be live for Friday's game. We'll be live for Saturday's game. That, of course, is on the main channel. We will be live tomorrow morning to do some more previewing ahead of Friday night's game. So, again, apologies for being late this morning, yo. I don't know if my alarm didn't go off. I know my phone alarm did, but, like, I have my actual alarm clock right here. If it was an audio only, I'm showing my digital alarm clock that I got from Target. Last night, I needed to plug in my laptop, so I plugged in my charger, unplugged my alarm, and that resets the alarm. I later set my alarms back. It resets the clock, so, you know, it goes, you plug it out, take it out, plug it back in. It goes right to 12 o'clock. I reset it. I set my alarms, but I guess I didn't turn it on, or maybe it's on PM. Anyways, I apologize. Won't happen again. Morning Yankees sticking to an 8 o'clock start time. Today was just a little slip up. I really do apologize, especially for those who are waiting in the chat. Anyways, that's going to wrap up this episode, though. Great start to the season. It is just one game, but tomorrow it'll be two games, and then after that, three games, and so on and so forth, and what have you. We are here all the time. The Morning Yankee Show, we'll be back tomorrow morning, and of course, the watch party for game two will be, I think first pitch is 4:15 or like 4:30. We'll be live like 15, 20 minutes before first pitch. Cam Schlittler's 2026 season debut. That's all I got, chat. Appreciate you guys so much. And yeah, yo, another season officially underway. I will see you guys tomorrow morning.